Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
It seems to me that it's extraordinarily complex.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack earlier in the week saying that USDA was pulling a proposed rule for fair and competitive livestock market.
There's a body of law, there's precedent, there are rules and regulations that currently exist, and being able to provide that appropriate balance, appropriate extension, if you will, and clarity, if you tweak it here or there, it can fundamentally change the direction. So if you're going to, if there is an intent to do that, then it seems like it ought to start from the beginning of the process, not at the end of the process. And so knowing that we didn't have enough time to finish the process, we thought it was the wisest course to withdraw the rule.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
These standards could be adopted by clean transportation fuel programs to incentivize the production of biofuel feedstock crops using climate smart practices. If leveraged in clean transportation fuel programs, these standards may help farm producers earn a price premium for reduced carbon intensity biofuel feedstocks, facilitating both climate benefits and new market opportunities.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack announcing the publication of an interim rule on technical guidelines for climate-smart ag crops used as biofuel feedstocks. Now, this interim rule establishes guidelines for quantifying, reporting, and verifying greenhouse gas emissions associated with the production of biofuel feedstock commodity crops.
Now, in addition to the final rule, we're also making the carbon intensity or CI calculator used by the rule available for public inspection and peer review before the calculator will be finalized. Now, this is going to enable users to see preliminary CI values for included crops and climate smart agricultural practices in their respective counties. Once this tool is finalized, Treasury and others should consider USDA's technical guidelines in proposing rules that recognize the CI benefits of climate smart agriculture. Now, these benefits could be substantial. Let me give you a couple of examples. In the beta version of the calculator, it would show, for example, in Clean, Illinois, that if you produce corn with no-till, cover crops, and nitrification inhibitors, you could reduce your carbon intensity per bushel by 70%, roughly. If you produce soy in that county and use no-till and inhibitors, you could reduce the carbon intensity per bushel by nearly 50%. If you produce sorghum in Gray County, Kansas, using no-till, cover crops, and inhibitors, you could reduce the carbon intensity per bushel by about 90%.
Now, the highlights of this rule means that farmers can choose one or more of the climate smart actions, no-till or reduced till, cover crops, and nutrient management. And unlike prior rules, farmers no longer have to use all three on the same field at the same time. Corn, soybeans, and sorghum crops specified as 45Z crops.
They were, I think, recognizing that we at USDA were working on the interim final rule and the calculator, which essentially, once we completed our work, could essentially be rolled into or dropped into whatever work they need to do to finalize 45Z.
And what are we talking about under 45Z? Well, it's tax credits for sustainable aviation fuel. And Vilsack explains the benefits of the interim rule.
Sustainable aviation fuel is an emerging industry that's going to create opportunities. What we're doing now is creating the platform and the framework and the circumstance and the data that agriculture have opportunities to be significant contributors as feedstocks for an expanding new industry. This rule in the calculator gives them the ability to specifically calculate individual fields in individual counties relatively easily. The impact and effect of what they can do now and in the future on their farm to produce the sustainable aviation fuel at the levels and amounts necessary is going to require a significant amount of feedstock. Agriculture now is in a position to say, if we use corn in this county, and we use it in a no-till circumstance, and we use the properly timed fertilizer, this is the benefit to the ethanol production facility that will be producing the SAF. They, in turn, can document to whoever's purchasing SAF that, in fact, it results in a CI score that is more than 50% efficient relative to current jet fuel.
The interim rule provides guidelines on biofuel feedstock crops and entities in the biofuel supply chain, quantification of farm-level crop-specific carbon intensity, the chain of custody standards within that biofuel supply chain, and the Climate Smart Ag Practice Standards for biofuel feedstock crops. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Many of my clients increase their investments in equipment to make use of the 199A deduction, as well as the last full years of bonus depreciation.
Michelle Gallagher is a CPA from Michigan, testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
If the 199A deduction expires, the taxes on pass-through businesses will go up sharply, while C corporations and publicly traded companies will continue to enjoy their lower 21% TCJA permanent corporate rate. This simply is just not fair to the Main Street businesses and farmers of our country. 199A should be permanently extended, period. Full bonus depreciation under the TCJA has also been a game changer for my business clients. Immediate deductions have freed up capital for investments in state-of-the-art equipment, resulting in increased efficiency, production, and job creation. Lower marginal tax rates for nearly all taxpayers have bolstered the financial health of businesses and farmers and provided relief for working families. When marginal rates are higher, families must tighten their belts and businesses face greater financial strain at the expense of growth opportunities. When marginal rates are lower, working families have more take-home pay and they can invest more in their families and communities. If the marginal rates are not permanently extended, nearly every American worker will go home with a smaller paycheck starting in just 11 short months. The doubling of the standard deduction has simplified tax filing for millions of Americans and provided substantial tax savings for middle-class families. In addition to these tax savings, the simplicity has saved taxpayers valuable time and enabled them to focus on running their businesses, farms, and households instead of navigating complex tax filings. The expanded child tax credit under TCJA has been a lifeline for working families and has even had a direct impact on my own family. My brother, who works as a public school teacher, relies on this child tax credit to help provide for his wife and seven children between the ages of 4 and 19. His modest salary is stretched thin, and the child tax credit has been essential to covering their family expenses. For families like this, the expanded child tax credit is not just helpful, it is indispensable and must be retained. The estate tax presents a constant source of worry and financial burden for many family businesses and farmers that I work with. Many business owners and family farmers may appear wealthy on paper, but almost always lack the cash or liquidity to pay estate taxes. I have seen this lead to family businesses closing or being gobbled up by multinational corporations because they realize they cannot afford to pay the death tax. Additionally, compliance costs related to the estate tax amount to over $18 billion annually, according to the Tax Foundation, a figure that actually exceeds the annual estate tax revenue collected. That's right. More money is spent annually complying with the tax than the government collects in the tax itself. If the estate tax is not addressed this year, the current exemption will be cut in half, doubling or tripling the amount of unexpected families forced to pay this death tax. Congress should pull the plug on the death tax for good. No grieving family has to deal with this unfair double tax. Small businesses and farms are the heartbeat of their communities, creating jobs and fostering local economic growth. As someone who has worked closely with businesses, farmers, and working families for 35 years, I have seen the tangible benefits of the TCJA firsthand. I urge Congress to permanently and swiftly extend these provisions to provide certainty to America's small businesses, farmers, and families.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The other thing that we've been pointing to with respect to why it's a bad time to make large investments has been the impact of interest rates.
Dr. Jim Mentert has been the director of the Center for Commercial Ag at Purdue. Recently retired, but still handles the Purdue University CME Ag Group Barometer.
And that's really shifted, especially if you go back to about May. Back in May, 44% of the people in the survey who said it was a bad time to make investments pointed to rising interest rates as a concern. That's down all the way to 20% this month. That's the lowest percentage we've gotten, I think, since we started asking that question back in 23. So if you look at people who say it's a good time to make large investments in their farming operation, First of all, in our overall survey, the percentage of people who say it's a good time to make large investments varies somewhat from month to month, and it's interesting to watch that trend a little bit. This month, just 17% of people in the survey said it's a good time to make large investments. That's down from 22% who felt that way in November. That number has been as low as, I think, 13% in over the course of 2024, Michael. So we're still up compared to the low, but certainly down from what we were back in November. And then when you ask them, you know, why is it a good time to make large investments? The number one thing they point to is the fact that dealers have large inventories, which is obvious if whether you look at the equipment manufacturers' data or just drive around and look at machinery lots, right?
As part of the survey, Mentor digs in deeper on some of the major issues affecting ag.
Do you think income tax rates for farms and ranches will be higher, lower, about the same 5 years from now? In October, only 8% said they expected to see lower income tax rates. In both November and December, that was up to 36%. And on the higher end, in October, 38% said they thought we would see higher income tax rates. In both November and December, it was 9% said higher and 7% in December. And then when you look at estate taxes, almost the same thing with respect to what we saw for income tax rates. Only 10% of the people expect to see higher estate tax rates in December. Back in October, 40% said they expect to see higher tax rates. So people ask us a lot, why did sentiment improve following the election? And the three things we've been able to point to, and these are not exclusive, there could easily be some other things, but it's clear people expect to see a different regulatory environment. They expect to see a different tax environment.
Yes.
Then we'll get to the last one, and that's trade. How likely do you think U.S. agriculture is at risk of a trade war that results in a significant decrease in U.S. ag exports? And the results, we didn't ask this before the election. We asked it in November and December. We didn't think to ask this one in October. But the results these last 2 months, very consistent. 48% of producers in December said they think a trade war is either likely or very likely. That's up a little bit, up from 42% who felt that way in November. You know, Michael, as I think about why is the barometer a little bit weaker this month than it was a month ago, this might be the reason.
Yes, I think it could be.
Just this increasing awareness of the risk of a trade war and it having a negative impact on U.S. ag exports. And then this is the question that you referred to earlier, Michael, and that is, do you think that the fall 2024 election outcome will lead to a farm safety net that is stronger than, weaker than, or about the same as before the election? And 55% said they expect to see a stronger safety net.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
If Congress fails to act, the average family of four will end up paying the equivalent of 9 weeks of groceries in higher taxes. After 4 years of sticker shock at the grocery store, that's the last thing families need.
Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee from Missouri, Jason Smith.
40 million parents will have their child tax credit slashed in half. 2 million family farmers will see the death tax exemption slashed in half. 91% of all taxpayers will see their guaranteed deduction slashed in half. 26 million small businesses will be hit with a 43.4% top tax rate, more than 20 points higher than what businesses pay in communist China. Today, as we speak, businesses are making decisions about where they are going to invest, hire, and grow this year and in the years to come. And they're making those decisions based on the taxes they expect to pay. And uncertainty is an unnecessary weight on our job creators and our family farmers, who will have to start calling accountants and estate planners to figure out how they might navigate higher taxes.
Opponents of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act says it doesn't help the right business. Mike Kelly is a representative from Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you all for being here and taking a day out of your lives to come and talk to people who've never really been in the private sector. I'm an automobile dealer. Second generation, my son's now running the store. My mother and father started in 1953 with absolutely nothing, a one-car showroom and about six service bays, and worked their tails off 7 days a week to make it profitable. I love people who have to make payroll. There have been several times, and we were doing TCJ to begin with, and Chairman Brady was talking about it one day. I said, actually, Chairman, there's two times in my life I paid absolutely no tax. And he looked at me and said, Mike, how'd you get away with that? I said, we lost money that year. Isn't it bizarre that we talk about where would the revenue come from? Well, we take a certain percentage out of people's profits, with the exception you can lose money and still be held up to responsible for real estate taxes, wage taxes, every other single tax that every single American pays every single day. And we come here today and talk about the benefits of TCJA. Was it really true? Well, yes, it was true, because we actually garnered more revenue with TCJA than we'd ever seen before. And I can remember being there the day that vote was taken. It was the wealthy, the wealthy, the wealthy. They never get taxed their fair share. And all of a sudden we did TCJA, and all these wonderful, wonderful people who left America because America was being too tough for them came home. They hired people. They made investments. Certainty is absolutely the most important part of any business. I wish in the business I was in that there was certainty as to who it is that's going to be able to buy a car or truck from us tomorrow. A friend of mine by the name of Leonard Pintel, who is the mayor of our town, he said, Mike, you know what I would love to see? I would love to see that it was required that you have to actually survive in the private sector before you can go into public office and be paid on commission only and lost your job at least once. All of these wonderful talks that we have going back and forth about who benefits, who loses, who's paying it. I'll tell you who pays it. Companies that are profitable. Why did these companies that left America come back? Because of TCJA. Why did they leave to begin with? It's not because they didn't love America. They just got to the point they knew America didn't love them anymore. We would tax them out of existence and complain for them. It's like the little hen, right? Lay, hen, lay, and no golden eggs quit coming. And we said, what happened? The hen couldn't lay them anymore. We go through all these different things and what we're going to do and what we're not going to do and how difficult it is. I got to tell you, please, please, give me a break.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As I said in my previous testimony, my business is a small business that nurtures other small businesses, and a critical aspect of our work is providing financial advice to our clients, which can often include providing a listening ear and encouraging words, and that perspective is a crucial part of any testimony presented before you.
Allison Couch is a financial consultant from Georgia testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
In my April 2023 testimony, I underscored the need for Congress to act to preserve the 20% small business deduction. In that testimony, I stated that the tax burden on small businesses was already incredibly heavy, and allowing this deduction to lapse when it has been in place for so many years will not feel like a sunset, but a tax increase. Today, with this section of the tax code set to expire in less than 1 year, this remains true, and I urge Congress to act swiftly to renew it. The small businesses that I work with have become dependent on having access to these funds, and they need the certainty provided by making the 20% small business deduction permanent. My typical client generates $3 million or less in annual revenue, employs an average staff of 10 people, and depends on the small business deduction. I have practiced public accounting for 21 years and can tell you without a doubt that the 20% small business deduction has been the single most beneficial tax deduction for small business owners. Moreover, this deduction is more far-reaching vertically and horizontally to small business owners when compared to other deductions. For example, depreciation deductions require significant cash flow reduction or taking on debt, but Section 199A does not. This is true of small businesses nationwide. A recent EY study on the macroeconomic impact of Section 199A for small businesses found that 25.9 million small businesses nationwide utilize this deduction, and that it directly supports job creation in the small business sector. As part of my testimony today, I would like to submit that report to the hearing record. Another area of apprehension for small business clients is that if Congress does not act, the reduced tax rates for individual income tax brackets established under TCJA will increase. As members of this committee are aware, the 20% small business deduction is available to businesses that operate as pass-through entities like S-corporations and partnerships. This means that their business profits and the deduction flows from their business return onto their 1040 and nets there to be taxed at the owner's individual tax rates. In fact, 33 million small businesses in the United States are organized as pass-throughs. As I stated in my testimony in April 2023, business income is different from business owner's income. I would like to stress that point yet again. Increased business income allows small business owners to reinvest in their businesses and employees. If Congress does not address the changes in the personal income tax brackets set to expire at the end of this year, small businesses structured as pass-throughs will be faced with a tax increase. Finally, in my April 2023 testimony, I highlighted the issue of regulatory burdens imposed on small businesses by the IRS, particularly the thresholds on 1099 NEC and 1099 K forms. The threshold of 1099 NEC of $600 has not been adjusted in decades. I would ask you to consider a one-time adjustment of this threshold to account for the impact of inflation over the years with no adjustment, where no adjustment has been made, and then an annual adjustment thereafter. On the other hand, while the threshold for 1099K has been adjusting, it's moving in the wrong direction.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
It's hard for me to be associated with you guys. I learned so much from you. And it's pretty awesome to be the recipient of this award, to be recognized by your peers like this.
At the 2025 Extension Cotton Specialist Award Banquet in New Orleans, Louisiana, Dr. Ben McKnight with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service picked up the 2025 Cotton Specialist Award.
You know, there's a lot of outstanding people I work with on a day-to-day basis. Dale Mott, my program specialist. Dale has been with Extension for nearly 30 years. Most of those years has been as program specialist with the Extension Cotton Specialist Group in College Station. When you're surrounded by fantastic people like that work hard, it makes your job a lot smoother. We have fantastic leadership. Dr. Baltusberger, Dr. Redman, they're the guys I report to. When you have good leaders, that, as Dr. Redman said the other day, he said, my number one job is to stay out of the way of the Extension Specialist. Just stay out of the way, let them get their job done. We have a number of outstanding colleagues around the state. Josh McGinney, Andy Kamira, Jordan Bell, Kim Leger, Brady Nolan, and those regional agronomists, we're a real cohesive bunch, and we always communicate. And when you have colleagues like that, it definitely makes your job go a lot smoother. Plus, the fellowship and the camaraderie with those colleagues is just outstanding. As Gayla mentioned, I remembered, I pinpointed who said, a few of those words to you. I was lucky to have some fantastic mentors. Dr. Scott Sensman, I worked under Dr. Sensman for my master's degree, and then for my PhD with Dr. Eric Webster. And anybody that knows each of those individuals knows that they have two completely different leaders. Polar opposite. But it was a unique experience for me to learn from both of them and to draw from their mentorship. Anyway, this is really awesome, and thank you. Thank you so much.
The award presented by Bayer. Tim Dabbert is Bayer's Cotton Technical Product and Strategy Lead.
The biggest thing is they're in the field, in the region, supporting, whether the county that they live in, counties surrounding the state, they're in the field supporting the growers, with all aspects of cotton, whether it's budgeting, whether it's herbicide use, whether it's variety selection, whether it's, all the different aspects of cotton, and they do a phenomenal job with that extension portion and helping those growers be as profitable as they can. So it's a way that, we support what they do because they're helping our customers with whatever they need. And then they're keeping us in loop and informed on what's going on in the field. What problems can we work on together? So it's building that relationship with the grower, but also helping solve some of the problems in their area and letting us know where they need help or what we need to focus on. So it's kind of a feedback loop that we have with those cotton specialists.
Jerry Duff is president and founder of AgriAuthority.
In 1990, we actually generated the first of the Cotton Specialist of the Year Award and went to Bob Metzer at Texas A&M University. for his work. And since then, I think this marks about the 36th cotton specialist that's been recognized. And we've managed that awards program since day one. So we're very excited about that. We feel very privileged and very honored to be involved with this program. It's a really neat program.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The connection between USDA's final interim rule on technical guidelines on climate-smart agricultural crops as biofuel feedstocks and associated carbon intensity calculator with the recent guidelines on sustainable aviation fuel tax credits, 45Z, issued by the Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack talking with reporters Wednesday.
They were, I think, recognizing that we at USDA were working on the interim final rule and the calculator, which essentially, once we completed our work, could essentially be rolled into or dropped into whatever work they need to do to finalize 45Z.
Acknowledging Treasury and IRS plan to propose rules associated with its 45Z guidance at a later date to incorporate benefits from certain climate-smart ag practices.
Climate-smart agriculture practices are, in fact, a critical component and will be for 45Z.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.